I've been out in California 2 years now. The Lygus work is new to me. I've spent probably too long working on boll weevil. But one of the things we got into when we got out there, and also communicated quite a bit with people in the Southeast, there's been a recent push to develop better sampling information. I think we need to have that. Basically, for in my experience, all of the field crop insects we work with, we could benefit from that. The big issue I have is we do most of our sampling using relative sampling methods without a whole lot of knowledge about what those methods tell us, how to interpret those counts. We're very interested in developing thresholds, but if you don't know what the counts from a relative method actually mean, I think that's an impediment to developing meaningful thresholds. I know there are a number of large-scale ecological studies going on that could benefit from that information, and I think any of the ecological studies that try to make inferences based on population estimates could greatly benefit from knowing what those estimates mean. There have been a number of what I might call flurries of activity of sampling work, specifically in Lygus. It's run on about 20-year intervals, and to a large extent, we redo a lot of the things that have been done. The results of the earlier work, maybe because we don't know the people or we assume the system has changed such, but we've kind of tended to abandon some of that work and their results. So this particular talk is going to focus on some work that we did to address a fairly recent publication that indicated significant differences between every sampler in a large sampling study. And one of my concerns there is if every person that's sampling gets a population estimate that's statistically different, I don't see how you're ever going to develop thresholds, because you basically have to tailor the threshold to each person that's going to sample. Now, we did this work using marked released adults. There's a picture of a marked bug there. We paint their wings shut with fingernail polish so they can't fly, so we can make them stay where we want them. Our objective, again, was to look at differences between individual samplers, but I want to address just a minute why we use the mark release recapture method. This is a hypothetical Lygus population. It took me a while to figure out how to do this. I ended up using paint and Microsoft and it's a spray can just to try to get a pattern across there. The green's cotton rows, the black dots are Lygus. In a typical scenario, a typical approach, you go out and you lay out your field plots, but the problem you have a problem and you really don't know what's in each plot. And based on my personal experience, and there's a good deal of evidence about spatial distribution patterns on multiple scales, typically you don't have experimental units. If you use the individual rows as experimental units, you don't have experimental units that are equal, and that's a major source of variance that you can't contend with. In this case, amongst the 8 rows, the counts of Lygus in those rows range from 9 to 27. So what you end up having to do then is subsample. If you really want to get at the problem correctly, you end up subsampling. That changes what the experimental unit is in the analysis, and I find reading the journal that typically that's not analyzed correctly. So what we do, by using marked bugs, we have some assurance of what's in each row. Now, I'm not going to tell you that every row is equal, but I will tell you that every row is equivalent. So I think we've eliminated a major source of variation. One of the other things that it does for us, instead of having used subsamples, now each row is an experimental unit, which lends some economy to your experimental approach. One other thing it does for us is because we can control how many bugs go out, we can avoid, for the most part, zero counts. And zero counts just kill you if you want to use the standard ANOVA approach. So we ran 4 experiments this summer. They were each randomized complete block designs with 3 replications. We had both Acala and Pima cottons. We had 2 plantings. Actually, the first planting, we weren't satisfied with the stand, and we didn't have enough rows to get all the way through to collect all the data we wanted, so we browbeat the farm manager into a second planting, which was which was very interesting because the environmental conditions that cotton came up and grew under were very different, and it gave us a very different canopy architecture. So we had our typical planting, actually was a little later than typical, but that was late April, and then we had an early June planting. The three treatments were samplers. Now, one of the samplers actually had a great deal of experience with sweep net for Liguus in cotton, although I did not particularly care for his technique. I was one of the samplers. I've used the sweep net in cotton, not too much for Liguus, and then the third sampler was experienced with the sweep net, but not with cotton. We spent about 5 minutes the first day before we took our first samples to decide how we would do this, and really the only changes we made was the one sampler. I said, don't use one hand. You have to use two hands. That was the extent of our training, and then we just went at this to see what we could find. We used 10-meter sample rows, and we released 4 marked bugs per meter of row. We released those bugs after 7 p.m. in the evening. We did that because we have some pretty high temperatures. We're bringing those out of the laboratory. Some of those were lab-reared bugs. Most of them in this particular study were actually field-collected, but we had to take them back to the lab and mark them. And so we're trying to avoid too much heat shock. And then we come back and sample those after 9 o'clock the next morning, usually between 9:15 and 9:30. So if we look at the first experiment on upland cotton, on the early planting, I'm not giving means of samplers, because I'll tell you right offhand, and this will make this go through maybe a little quicker. None of the experiments did we get statistical differences among samplers. And none of the experiments did we get statistically significant interactions between samplers and sample dates. But in some of the experiments, we do get statistical differences between sample dates. We were also in a very interesting position that we had a fairly substantial acreage of safflower about 3 or 4 miles distant to us, and we had a very large population of native Liguus. So we took counts of native Liguus as well. The plant height, you'll see one thing I want to point out. You get up July 1st, you're up to 83 centimeters, and then you drop down to 58. That's because of running out of rows that were usable in the blocks we set up. We used 3 replications, but we actually had 6 blocks set up, and we moved those around as we ran out of rows. And there was some variation, one in the field, the other in plant height, and that accounts for the fluctuation in plant height and in nodes. But basically, we got a difference among dates in the marked bugs that we collected. That reflects a change in collection efficiency that is correlated to plant development. I won't say plant height because it's not that simple. And we've seen this before. We did not, however, in that particular test, detect a difference among dates in the population levels of the native bugs. Now, when we go to the Pimas, you look at the plant height, you realize the varieties that we used. The Pima variety we used tended to be a little squattier than the upland. The canopy is a little wider comparison to its height. It branches a little more profusely, and it tends to have bigger leaves. One thing in both of these plots, with the native Liguus populations that we had, and I think also some early weather conditions we had, at least on the early dates, up to late June, we had very poor square set on these plants. Now, we made up for that, and we did get up where we had blooming cotton before we were done. It just took us a couple extra weeks, but that may have influenced some things as well. But again, we get differences in marked bugs in the numbers we collected, and you see that generally declining, and that reflects a change in collection efficiency with a bigger and more developed plant. And we also got differences in this particular instance in unmarked bugs, but the pattern is different than what we saw with marked bugs. Now we move into the second experiment. The time that this is planted, it's hot, and these plants shot out of the ground. They didn't even set the first squares until you had 8 or 9 main stem nodes. Square set was very poor through this whole study. We got up to 19th of August. We still don't have white blooms. A lot of these plants, the biggest square on them is Matchhead Square. Square set was very poor. Most of those squares were towards the upper portion of the plant. We had pretty good plant heights. We had plenty of nodes, but our efficiency, for the most part, stayed pretty high. And we didn't get statistical difference through the four sample dates that we had. We did get statistical differences, however, of the native bugs. One other thing that we had going on in here, especially once you get into mid-August, was we had an extremely high population level of assassin bugs, and we actually made a concerted effort to kill them when we released our ligus because it was irritating to dump out a marked ligus, and for the short instance that it was disoriented, then have an assassin bug charge over and eat him. So we made a concerted effort to kill these things, but they also, we had rows set aside to look at what our recovery was, so we had an idea of what we were losing. And on some of these dates, we lost it. We have estimated that we lost close to half of what we put out. And I think that's one reason that those numbers dropped down some. And in the Pima, we actually did get some differences between dates. And again, this 1.9 on 12 August, I'm convinced that that's mainly due to predation by assassin bugs. And in this case, we didn't get differences between dates for the unmarked bugs. And this the Pima and the upland plots, they're butted up right next to each other. So these are not, in both cases, They're directly adjacent to each other, so it's not the differences we're seeing in populations aren't because they're a quarter mile away or anything. So my conclusion is that we didn't see any evidence of a sampler effect. Our overall means were, I think, the lowest was 3.4 bugs per 10 sweeps. The highest was 3.8. Not the same person wasn't. The same sampler wasn't necessarily the highest count in each of the studies. And so we feel like if you make a reasonable effort to coordinate what you're doing, you can anticipate collecting very similar numbers of bugs for different people. So that was encouraging to us. One of the things that we found particularly interesting was that there wasn't a consistency in the counts or the differences between dates when you looked at marked bugs versus unmarked bugs. And the reason that's important to me, I think, I'm pretty sure at least in the first test, the main reason we got differences between dates were changes in collection efficiency. But those changes in collection efficiency are also going to influence your population estimates of the native bugs. And if you don't have some measure of that, the population trends that our counts would show are really, really obscure the real trends because you can't account for this change in efficiency. Now, in the second study, there I think with the assassin bugs, that threw a monkey wrench in things, so that's still not real clear how you interpret that, although I think we can take our recovery rows and probably adjust those and get something closer. But the moral of the story is when you go out and you have no idea what your collection efficiency is, except that you know that it's changing, it's not always straightforward to interpret the seasonal patterns in populations. Do you have any questions? Yes, Peter. No, and I'll tell you why. Because that's a whole other estimation problem. What we did was we had single meters of row out there that we introduced bugs, known numbers of bugs into at the same time. And immediately after sampling, then we did whole plant samples of those. We actually dissected those plants. And in that first study, we were better than 80% recovery on every date, over 90% on most. In the second study, not so. The second study, that's where we had that lower recovery, two dates of 54%. So we have pretty reasonable assurance, at least the first study, that the vast majority of what we put out there was still there when we sampled.
But still, your dates are confounded with infestation.
On which, of infestation that we put out?
Yeah.
No, because we're using different row and a different color every date. I don't see dates being confounded with infestation. If our recovery from our from the rows that we set out to determine what our retention was, if that's similar every date, and in the first study there's no statistical difference between those, they're all very similar, then we have similar numbers left in that row when we sample them on each date. That make sense? John? Well, we don't have any way to know that. And people have said, well, you have to assume that the bug behaves the same way as the field bug. And I understand that, but nobody can tell us how the field bug behaves. Now, we know that when we go out there early in the morning, right after dawn, that we can find marked bugs at the top of the plant, and we can find native bugs at the top of the plant. And we know that the day goes on that they both tend to disappear. What you don't know is, if you change that behavior, how much do you have to change it, and how much does it change your sampling efficiency? And we don't know that. But I will tell you this. I would rather be in a situation where I have, where I know within 10 or 20% of what's out there, and that I know I have some assurance what those numbers are, than to go set a study up when I'm sampling and I have no idea what's there. And if you want to look at how often this looks, look at the insecticide acaricide report sometime and look how many times the pre-treatment samples are markedly different between treatments, because it happens. And if you don't know that and you're making ecological inferences on that, you're going to be wrong a lot. Any other questions?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.